You're listening to Torch Talk with Chris, Kyle, and Dana on the Sidious Mag podcast, presented by Hayward Magic. Hayward Magic is a new, unique, and fresh editorial channel on Instagram that captures the magic and intensity of track and field. Their mantra is hashtag make it to Hayward, because Hayward is not just a place, but a state of mind. It's where guts meets magic. I've been a fan of the account since it started a few months ago. You may have seen them on Instagram stories with some of their motivational posters and sayings. One of my personal favorite things that they do are these newspaper headlines when records are broken. So look out for those during the games, because I'm sure we're going to see world records and American records dropping left and right. Recently, they've released a few awesome stop motion and claymation shorts that they've put together. Those take so much work and time, so to see it happening for our sport and our stars is particularly cool. We've seen the comments. Who's behind this account? What's happening? What are they selling? They're actually not selling anything. There's something cool about the RN mystique behind the account, which slowly gets revealed over time, and there's much more to come. All athletes, fans, and feats of guts are welcome. Follow at Hayward Magic on Instagram, because there's no better time to be a fan of track and field with Worlds and Olympics coming up in the years to come. So follow at Hayward Magic and stay tuned for more throughout the next couple days.
Molly's fourth grade project, where you wrote that you wanted a gold medal at the Olympic Games, and here you are with a bronze. How does it compare to the dream you had?
Oh my God, I can't believe it. Just getting here was already a dream come true, and to be able to come out today against a field like this and be able to come away with a medal, with a bronze, for the U.S., I'm in shock. I'm in disbelief right now. I've worked so hard for this. Everybody has supported me through this. This is not just me. This is my family. This is my coach. This is everyone who's trained with me. I just can't believe this right now. I'm so grateful for everyone who got me here, and I'm so happy.
I just got word from some of your coaches that you said you actually came with your medal uniform, so you confidence was high coming in this morning.
My coach, as we were leaving the room, he told me to bring it with me, and I was like, why would I bring that with me? He's like, just in case you might need it. So I'm really glad my coach had the forethought, and he believed I could do it even if I didn't. I just wanted to come out today and, I don't know, get up in it, stick my nose where it didn't belong, and just see what I could come away with, and I guess that's a medal.
Hey, well, you know who else can believe it are the folks that we were listening to throughout the broadcast, the Seidel House, and I've got them right now, and that's your mom right there. So they can hear you on the phone, and they can hear you over the podcast.
We did it. I'm good. I'm so tired. Please drink a beer for me.
We're going to do what she says. We're going to drink some beers for Molly.
That was the third time I listened to that interview. So I'm on beer three for Molly.
Beers for Molly. Cheers.
Cheers. Molly Seidel, the first ever guest on the More Than Running podcast. Guest number 200 on the Sidious Mag podcast. A dear friend of Sidious Mag. And so really, really awesome race. I mean, we'll just get it out of the way. We award her the magic moment of the day.
Gutsiest performance
of the day.
I didn't even know you could do that.
Yeah.
We could double up. Yeah. I guess it's a special occasion.
Special occasion for Molly. We're going to kick things off in this episode talking about the women's marathon, which was moved up an hour because of how hot it is in Sapporo. There was a little bit of drama, I think, that people tried to stir up on Twitter that, like, at some point, some people may have already been asleep when they made this announcement. But it seemed to have gone off without a hitch. It was 85% humidity, like 85 degrees or something like that.
They were dropping some facts about the wet bulb temperature. I was trying to become a meteorologist. All I know is
that... It's all about dew point.
The dew point. Dew point's stressful. But runners were running with bags of ice on their head, and that's the only measurement I need. Is it hot enough that you need to run with a bag of ice on your head?
The bags of ice were very funny, the way they were plopped on the head, and it wasn't like any special bag.
No, it was a little plastic bag of ice.
Yeah.
Which, in you know, if you're in Europe, that'd be like liquid gold, hard to come by. There's no ice in Europe, but
that's more expensive than beer.
Yeah, for sure. But we're in Sapporo.
Yeah, and it looked brutal. I mean, we saw people already starting to DNF within the first 5K of the race, and I didn't take a final look at the numbers of like what percentage of the field ended up dropping out, but it was a real test of just pure strength. And like, I guess the race really, I guess, took off at about 30K. The pack dwindled to a group of 11. But for the longest time in the beginning of the race, it was 50 people deep, 60 people deep. And
620 miles. Super conservative. Kicking it off.
Yeah, because it was just so way too hot.
There's nothing you can do in those first few miles, but you kind of want to warm up. But you can definitely ruin your race if you go out there and you try to push your pace or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw actually on Strava, I thought it was a really cool thing. Molly's watch obviously connected to her phone at some point.
Morning run.
And yeah, she ran about a mile at like 8:45 pace back and forth off the start line, it seemed, as her warm up. And so, you know, they needed a few miles to warm up.
We do need to see on Strava how much over a marathon Molly ran, because she wasn't taking the tangents. She was taking the shadiest route possible. So Molly was kind of zigzagging throughout this field. And it was kind of reminiscent in the beginning, actually, of the U.S. marathon trials in 2020, where there was such an enormous pack at the start. You're like, okay, who's going to make a move? When is it going to happen? And this seemed... there wasn't just that one person that went out. It was just more of a slow burn, rate of attrition. And it ended up being a pack. And we had the other USA athlete, Sally Kipiego, was up there for a while too. So for all, we had two Team USA. And really just a group of women who were all running along together. It was an interesting... the scenery I found in Sapporo was really interesting because you couldn't exactly tell where they were. And the graphically, they weren't giving us a lot of information about the course map or things like that. So we didn't have a lot of markers to go off of. Obviously, could have looked that up at the time. But it just seemed like we saw this little brick building a lot.
Yeah, I'm on her Strava right now. 26.75 is what...
it's not as much as I thought it'd be.
No, just...
London was more.
As of right now, it's only titled a morning run, which I hope she just doesn't change, and it's...
screenshot it now.
Yeah.
What was the elevation gain? I'd be curious.
Total elevation gain is 476 feet.
Okay, so not too hilly. You know, something that I think... we were talking yesterday about the Olympic trials on the track and how it affects you for the marathon. Obviously, in this case, they had plenty of time to recover between the two. But in Atlanta, you know, there was obviously a lot of discussion about the fact that the race to qualify for Tokyo was in such a hot and hilly place. And let's just say that clearly did a pretty good job selecting Molly to the team, right? Like the heat, she was built for it.
This was definitely so much conversation was around, like, there was just the worst people of all time saying that they should rerun the trials and have different people on the team. And to those people, I say, that's BS, and hopefully you were proven wrong today, that these people earned their keep. They were meant to be on the team, obviously. Alfie and Tulamak, she had a baby in between. She had a tough day. She suffered some injury issues. She had to drop around. What was around like 20K, had to drop out, unfortunately.
She was up there for as long as
she was up there fighting, and Sally Kipiego as well. The heat kind of got to her a little bit. But I think it would have been...
Sally actually held on for 17th.
She really did. And it was one of those things that she didn't fall back too much. The times were actually, you know, they were saying on the broadcast that they weren't that fast. And obviously, Bridget Kosgei is the world record holder. So, yeah, if you're comparing it to a world record, but this isn't Chicago on like a brisk day.
Yeah. No, she had a quote afterwards, and I'm going to pull it up right now, where she said, "I wanted it as hard as possible. I wanted it hot and windy, knowing a lot of these women run fast in conditions that are very good. I think I thrive off a little bit of adversity. The course in Atlanta was a tough hilly course. When the going gets tough, that's my strong suit."
I feel like we've been, and obviously, of course, you know, the three of us have known Molly for a bit, but just collectively as a running community, we followed Molly for so many years now, since she was such an accomplished runner all the way dating back to high school,
mm-hmm.
You know, Foot Locker days.
And first Foot Locker champ to win an Olympic medal.
NCAAs, that's a crazy fact. no pressure on the other 200 Foot Locker winners.
Grant Fisher could be next. He won Foot Locker, right?
There we go. No pressure, Grant. but we followed Molly then to Notre Dame and NCAA championships there, the ups and downs of her pro career. And it's not like she came out of nowhere for Americans, whereas maybe to those internationally who are watching this, they're like, who is this girl from the U.S.? That's...
Yeah, she said, I try not to have too many expectations. It was just to go out, stick your nose where it doesn't belong, and try and make some people angry. My goal today was just to go in and for other people to think, who the hell is this girl? Because I'm sure maybe Bridget Kosgei would know who she was because they both ran at the London Marathon together last fall. But for the most part, in an international field, unless you're like really up to watching the World Marathon Majors, of which Molly has only ever done one, and paid attention to the results of the marathon trials, and she maybe definitely flew under the radar for some people in this field.
There's no way she was in the scouting report for Bridget Kosgei.
Absolutely not. One thing about the marathon I think about too is it's so much more about your own race than your competitors, you know? Like, you plan to execute your own race versus, oh, it's what this person might do in the field. It's like, you know, at some point someone's going to take it. It kind of doesn't really matter so much. And it's not like there obviously is a marathon circuit, but you can dodge each other so much on this world majors. And Molly hasn't done a marathon since the London Marathon, and that was last fall.
Yeah. And according to a blog post on Momentous, a previous sponsor of this show who sponsors Molly as well, there was a note in there that said she was going to run the New York City Marathon later this fall. And so we're waiting for those elite fields to be announced. But that might have been a little bit of a spoiler out there.
Yeah. Well, so, all right. You know, thinking far down the line of the different marathons, you know, something that we were talking about earlier today, before the race even started, we're saying, like, how does the Olympic marathon kind of match up against the majors? And Dana,
you've been... So I've changed my mind in the past 4 hours.
And that's what I was going to come and check. Because a few hours ago, Dana, you said you'd rather win the Boston Marathon versus the Olympic Marathon.
Yeah, I've changed my mind now.
Okay. Because now that you've seen what bronze looks like, you're like, that looks...
Are great. You saying win?
Okay.
Or, like, meddling at the...
We were saying win initially.
We were saying
initially.
Win. We went down a couple of rabbit holes. Yeah. But the first... What we were starting with was, would you rather win an Olympic one medal or the Boston Marathon? And I was saying, you know, the opportunity that comes of it, being in this big city, you get to be brought back every time. It's not like you can keep going back to the marathon and they know you and love you and all these things. I will say, I have never seen an American woman in my lifetime. When did Dina win?
2004.
So I was not a track fan at that time. It was obviously in my lifetime. I was alive. But that wasn't... I was in the fourth grade. You know, yeah. I wasn't being inspired by Dina Castor and Olympic. You know, I honestly never thought that I would see an American woman medal. Like, it's always an option, but it's the tier of, like, Bridget Kosgei. What'd she run, like, 2:14?
2:14 in Chicago, yeah, 2 years ago.
It's like, I always thought that that was just kind of unattainable in a way that, you know, I've seen Dez.
Yeah, and so, I mean, we brought up Kosgei, who ended up silver, but also we got to give our flowers to Paris Jepchirchir, who took gold and made a bold move at about 39K, 40K, to pull away from Kosgei, who they were running together side by side the entire time. And this was the move that initially dropped Molly Seidel and who was it? Sal Kepter from
Sal Peter
from Israel. And at that point, it looked like it was going to be a possible battle for bronze between Molly and Sal Peter, and the other two were gone. Then Jepchirchir pulls away with 40K, and that takes some balls because you're going up against a 2:14 woman.
Yeah, but let's just, for 1 second there, you know, Jepchirchir is a 2:17 woman, has a 65-minute half marathon to her name, the fastest ever women's only half marathon. So there's a little distinction there because Chepngetich had run 64 with male rabbits. So depending on your opinion on if you should be allowed to have male pacers,
Paula would like
not
to have a word. Paula Radcliffe.
Yeah. And so, you know, the thing that I found so interesting was that the two teammates were working together so late in the race. It wasn't until that basically they had dropped the rest of the field that they really said, all right, everyone for themselves.
Yeah, and Molly definitely benefited on that, just in a way where she can completely grind it out in a way. And I kind of want to go back to something Kyle said earlier, where Molly, of course, has been at Alaska for a long time, has been good for a very long time, but she has been, in the past 2 years or so, 3 years, has been very open about the difficulties she's faced, you know, battling an eating disorder, battling just kind of so many ups and downs in her professional training career, kind of being injured at Notre Dame, a sponsorship change. So there's Molly has a depth to her story in a way where I think that we, right before we start recording, we were kind of talking to one of Molly's family members. And, you know, it's like everyone who's met Molly kind of knows that she's been destined for big things, but there's been all of these setbacks that have come along. And I think that you saw when she made that decision to stay that she wasn't going anywhere.
Well, let's, you know, I think when talking about the ups and downs of the career, an interesting, you know, part of the arc is the fact that she works with Coach John Green.
Oh, yeah. So John Green ran at Georgetown, was an All-American at Georgetown, a former teammate when Molly was running at the Freedom Track Club for Saucony. And John Green was suffering from some injury problems as well. And they kind of, you know, Molly left the team, was doing her own thing with Saucony, and, you know, really enjoyed, got on well with John, and kind of, they just decided in a way that they were going to work together. And I'm sure there were so many people, probably still are so many people,
who doubted that, of course.
That doubted that. So
because he's what? He's 27, 28?
I think he might be 26.
Wow.
He's younger than me.
So, you know, it's just not an accomplished coach with anything to his name up until now. Now he's the head coach of Mary Kane's new group, Atalanta. And now with this bronze medal, you know, I think he's getting some recognition, hopefully. And I think for Molly in particular, someone who's had so many ups and downs, having a coach who was able to drive so much attention directly to her probably was part of the difference.
It's actually interesting. So she does have personalization, but Molly is an extremely independent and social athlete. So she actually moved from Boston to Flagstaff full-time, bought a house there. And it's kind of more of a mutual trust relationship in the way that Molly knows what she's doing. She knows what works for her. John is kind of this guiding factor. We've talked about this a bit. And, you know, but if Molly wants to go join the Hoka and AZ Elite group and do a workout with Alfie, like, they'll fit it in. And I think that level of flexibility is really beneficial in a marathon when it's a grind out there and you can't do it alone.
Yeah, it's kind of so impressive, I guess, just what, how much she invested into this training block for the Olympics. Because if you've heard her speak on multiple marathons, Dana, I think in your conversation and the one that I had with her as well, she's like the biggest running fan. There was the video that Momentous did a couple months back. It's like that this is what she loves and like is just nothing else really sort of matters to her. And this is her career, her passion, and all of that came together on the sport's biggest stage.
But when it's fun. And yeah. I think that if anyone follows Molly's social media, and I highly recommend that you do, even though she probably has gotten a huge bump from all this, is Molly's the one showing up to the turkey trots in weird costumes and bringing everyone along. And she's
slowest mile ever.
That's right.
She has, not only is she a bronze medal, she's the slowest mile ever. But I think that something really special about Molly is that she brings a joy to the sport that sometimes I don't think that we're allowed to see. And I enjoy that.
Chris, what was the slowest mile ever? Just so we can give some context.
Yeah, so I'm pulling it up right now because Jordan Hesse just retweeted it because she said, patience and grit pay off in the heat and humidity. Speaking of, fun fact, your Olympic bronze medalist, Molly Seidel, can also run a mile in 36:56.01. So she's one of the nicest people too. What a run.
That's awesome. So if I can just vent for 1 second, and I know, Chris, this is going to kill your chances of ever being on the NBC broadcast, let alone both of ours. The commercial situation was killing me because we missed Sal Peters of Israel
dropped out. Not dropped out. Pulling off to the side and started walking and ended up finishing like one in the top, I don't know. It was way back there in 2:48.
66th.
And so you have Molly in fourth place, and the third place athlete starts walking. And
there was one thing.
I'm seeing on Twitter that all of a sudden Molly's in third place, and we completely missed it. And this is so late in the race. And basically this entire broadcast.
So what did we do? What did we do?
Well, we switched back and forth, and then we looked at the other one, and we're like, enough with the commercials. But then we wanted to hear Kara Goucher, who is obviously emotionally invested in this race and an expert and has been a fantastic commentator, you know, this whole year. We want to hear her emotion.
We need more Kara.
Yeah, it's a shame that Kara's been relegated to the like primetime tape delay.
I'm sure they don't think it's a relegation because it is the primetime, but the fans of running are not waiting 13 hours, you know? And this was, you know, she was on this time right now.
She was amazing.
She was incredible. The insight that she was giving, especially about the heat, there was one moment where she gave a reference to, I think she was set up for a question, how do you feel in this heat? And she goes, I felt like my forehead was going to explode. It was that hot. And she's genuinely experienced that. And that's something that, you know, Kara brings to the table, but she's very articulate. She notices every athlete. And it was just really unfortunate that we switched to a non-commercial broadcast and it sounded like the commentators were kind of asleep. And
well, I mean, it's more of an international feed probably, or at least international announcers, so they're not as excited about what they're seeing. Like, to them, this is just, you know, a really good race on their hands. But with Kara, like, you'd sense that she was starting to get emotional towards the end of it. And in addition to just Kara's heart racing, I literally just pulled up Molly's Strava, and while I was like, oh, this is funny that she titled it, you know, Morning Run in Sapporo. But if I'm looking at the heart rate right now, and this is obviously kind of a little wonky sometimes, starts the race, mile one, 160 heart rate. And then kind of just settles in there, anything from like 155 to like 168 for her heart rate in the first half of the race. Then it starts to build, 172 at mile 13. That's when she realizes she's halfway done. Then 176 by mile 17. You get up to mile 20, 179, 121, mile 21, 181, mile 22, 183, mile 23, 183. Mile 24, 184, mile 25, 187. At this point, there are like four people.
I'm really glad she got to stop running at that point.
25, 187. And when you hit mile 26 and only Bridget Kosgei and Paris Jepchirchir are right ahead of you, 188, crossing the finish line with a heart rate of 189.
Maybe that's why I don't run marathons, because my heart rate gets that high like pretty quickly.
The goal is to eventually see that on the screen. I want to know
live whoop data,
the various heart rates. I want to know the percentage of maximum.
I want to know how much of her body weight she sweat out today.
How confusing is it? A couple
good luck
camera
in drug
angles.
Testing.
A couple camera angles when they show like the athletes and it looks like they're on top of each other, mm-hmm. and then they pull up to like the helicopter or something. You're like, oh, they're not even close.
Yeah,
you do the counting method where you watch them pass an object and then you count for yourself, and that's the only way to do it. Except for in the final straightaway, they did have massive 200 meters to go. There was a moment I really thought Molly was going to run into one. She was running so close. She probably wasn't, just based on the visuals, but that was when you could really tell how actually far away they were from each other.
You gotta love that on the track they'll tell us that the 1500 meters in a pack are 1 meter behind each other, but then in a marathon when we actually need to know how far apart everyone is, you know, I want to know that data, because actually Molly only ended up about 10 seconds back.
Only 10 seconds back, and at one point was seven in those closing last 2 kilometers. But yeah, what a race. I mean, this is definitely one that people are going to be replaying constantly over and over again. That finish, setting it to the Titanic music and doing all sorts of really cool stuff. And
Chris's gears are spinning.
Yeah, I think it's one of those. When you did ask that question before of Olympic gold medal versus, you know, Boston Marathon win, if you would have told me New York, because I'm a New Yorker, I would, at first, earlier in the day, would have leaned towards the New York City Marathon. But seeing what happened today, even just, you didn't even have to tell me when, I would take bronze just like Molly and then be really happy for the rest of my career.
That was peak Twitter during that whole 2 hours. Watching everyone slowly build up in anticipation, I felt like I was watching with every runner that I know.
I think that the timing of all of it, you know, 5 p.m. on a Friday afternoon, what's a better time to watch a true American legend get a bronze medal?
You know, I'd be curious, like, because everyone talks about how, you know, watching, you know, track and field at a bar is like when it's on ESPN and all that kind of stuff. This was perfect timing to be up during happy hour. And so I'm wondering if there was like bars across the country where people all of a sudden were tuned in to see, just rooting for Molly, not knowing much about her incredible backstory, but just the fact that it's Team USA. And that's what people rally around this time during the Olympics.
Well, to quickly pivot, I guess, a little bit, in 2016 in Falmouth, after we had run the race that night, we all went to a bar like for an after party, the whole mile field, men's and women's, and we watched Sandra win the gold in Rio, mm-hmm. with, you know, 25 milers, and we were going insane. It was, you know, the whole bar packed, going wild. And we saw something similar today in the 1500 down in Kenya.
Yeah. Okay. So, well, before we toss it to that, we're going to cut really
nice
quickly
segue.
To our quick interview with Izzy Seidel. And we got her right before we started recording this to give us her perspective on what exactly went down at the Seidel House in Wisconsin where the party was happening, even though it was in a downpour of rain. So real quick, here is Izzy Seidel.
Hello.
Hello.
This is my phone. My phone literally has water damage because it was downpouring. My teeth are blue also from the cake that I was eating. It was downpouring for about 2 hours, or I would say an hour and a half of the stream. So I'm soaking wet and everything's wet. But
how's the Seidel family holding up?
Seidel.
It is wild. Wow. This has just been a... interesting past like 4 hours. We had a I'm like laying down because my head is just like throbbing and I feel like I have just I can't imagine how Molly feels right now, but I'm exhausted. We had like what do you want to know?
She said please have a beer for me, so we need to know how many beers have you had for Molly.
So I had one beer, actually. I only had one beer. We drained the kegs, though. There are kegs here. There's a lot of alcohol, honestly. It was an open bar. It was like us and all of our closest friends. Everyone came out of the woodworks that was like, I was Molly's babysitter back when, and I knew Molly from this. So everybody wanted to come. The food and the alcohol was flowing, but honestly, we were like glued to our seats the entire time because I thought there was probably going to be like idle time during it where it's like, she probably won't be on the screen the entire time. We're just like plastered in front of, we had this big TV. And then with about 30 minutes to go, the Wi-Fi went out because they're crashing down. Everyone had, and then the signal went out. So we're all huddled around a like 13 inch, like computer screen. There are like 50 people huddled around on this. And we were just like hoping the signal didn't go out. And I wish that you could see this. We had this huge TV because my Aunt Seidel goes all out for everything. And so it was a huge TV that everybody could look on. And since it was, I kid you not, we were in like the eye of the storm. Like Chris, when I say it was downpouring, like this is some of the hardest rain I have ever seen come down. And we're all outside. And the signal went, there is literally like lightning and thunder crashing above us. The signal went out, so all of the screens weren't working, and everyone is looking at a tiny laptop. Yeah, that was the only thing that we could watch on. Like, that's no, like, all service was gone. Somehow the Wi-Fi was working on that. And then people kept trying to call my mom. And so all of her notifications were coming up on the laptop, and so the stream kept going away, and it would be like everyone would scream all of a sudden, but we were just like all huddled around this like tiny laptop, just watching the last like 30 minutes go down, and everyone was cheering and screaming, and we're soaking. Very memorable. I'm never gonna forget this. So it's sad that we couldn't be there, but this was like a good consolation celebration.
We want to know what the reaction was like, in particular at the moment around 40K when Israel's Sal Kepter, I think, was running with her, just pulled off over to the side. What was the reaction at the Seidel House?
Wild, Chris. I kid you not. It was like screaming. We all, because we obviously the camera was right on her, and we all are just like, she just needs to stay in it. Like she started hunting down that girl, and then all of a sudden when she stopped, the crowd erupted, like absolute screams. It was hilarious and so exciting because we were like, she literally just needs to keep her legs moving and she is going to medal. That was definitely a moment.
Was there any point this spring, you spent a bunch of time with her, I guess, in this training block, that you kind of saw, wait, hold on, she has a chance of meddling, because like for her, I mean, this has been the biggest race of her life, and she loves running so much that like she was putting all her eggs into this basket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's funny because, so I talked to Molly right when she got to Tokyo, and she was in the Olympic Village, so she had just gotten there, she had about a week, and she was like, I am just so excited, like, if I were going to the Olympics, I'd be like, oh my god, this is amazing, like, be there for the experience. Molly's like, yeah, it's cool, but like, I'm just so excited to race, like, I'm so ready, and her training has been going amazing, and she just was like so genuinely like happy to be have this opportunity to run. And then last night, my brother and I, we gave her a call. It was like 9 p.m. our time, so it was the morning her time. And I was like, oh my god, like, how are you? Like, I know you're so excited. And she was like, guys, like, shit's getting real. Like, this is happening now. And I think she definitely was really nervous, but Molly didn't want to, like, I'll say it now, but when I first talked to her, she was like, I know people keep asking me, like, what are my goals, and I don't really, like, totally want to be, like, put it out there, because, like, it was kind of personal to her, and I think she knew deep down, like, she had it in her, and she said, she was like, you know what, like, it's the Olympics, like, I'm just gonna, like, give it my all, like, if I die, I die, but, like, it's the Olympics. So I knew that she was going to go hard from the gun. And that was pretty great, because we got to see her the entire race. And I was just, I wasn't nervous, like, leading into the race, because I know that the race does not start until, like, 4 miles to go. And so that's when I was like, okay, she just needs to, like, she has a pain tolerance like no other. And I knew that she just needed to, like, be strong and make it through, and she was so ready for this. So we're not shocked, but we're not like surprised that she did so well, but it's like, still, you just can never prepare for something like this. So we're very excited.
What's the celebration when she comes back?
Great question. I don't know. I need to figure out. So she's actually doing Falmouth. Molly and I will both be at Falmouth, so...
Does she need a host?
Very quick.
Does she need a host family?
So, yes, actually, we do. We need a host family, Gina.
We don't know anyone.
Let us know.
All right, sounds good. We'll host an Olympic bronze medalist. Fine.
Yeah, if you can find any accommodations.
I happen to know someone who has a house near the start.
I think it's really full circle, because the last time I was at Falmouth, it was 2019. I had just moved to Boston, knew no one. Molly was racing, and she was, like, so injured. I think her hip was actually broken. And I just remember thinking, like, oh, I would, like, love to do this race, like, next year. Like, can't wait. Molly and I can do it together. And Molly, like, wasn't doing great running-wise, like, back the last time she did Falmouth, and now it's crazy that, like,
she's still gonna do Falmouth.
We'll be going there, and yeah, yep. And it's crazy that, like, we'll now, like, the next time going back to Falmouth, like, she is a bronze medalist in the Olympic marathon. So real a lot has happened within the past 2 years, definitely for the best for her. So it's just so exciting to see, like, where she has come.
I was gonna ask, have you gotten a chance to FaceTime her since she crossed the finish line?
Yes.
What has she said?
I screen recorded it, Chris, and you can't hear her talking, but I was like, I'm screen recording this just so I have it. But so we got a call from, you know what's really funny, actually, this morning, so we, you know how they had the broadcast, you could see us, the NBC guy was like, so we just, like, want to make sure in the event, let's say, like, she gets a medal, like, we'll probably want to interview you guys, and I was like, like, I don't know if that's gonna happen, and it happened, Chris, and so they called, because our signals were all out, they FaceTimed me, so some NBC guy in Sapporo FaceTimes me, and then he handed over the phone to us. And so actually, if you watch the recording and she says, like, I want a beer, She was talking to us on the phone. So she had like a phone in front of her, and that's like, that is essentially like what was going down. So you could, we can piece together the audio, but pretty much we were asking her like, how do you feel? And she was like, I'm so tired. And yeah, she just was like, this is hilarious because she did the same exact thing after London. She called me like in the porta potty and was just like, yeah, like it was great. And so yeah, we were just talking to her, asking her how she was, and then they whisked her away. And then we talked to her again about 30 minutes ago. She was in her white fancy kit, and they were doing press stuff, but they had to find a translator, I guess. So we've talked to her twice already.
Nice.
But I cannot wait to hear from her, like, once this all settles down. And we talked to John a tiny bit. He seemed stressed, but in a great place, so.
I want to know, I didn't get to see your dad too much on the feed. How did he celebrate?
So, Fritz gave quite a toast at the beginning. And then, honestly, everyone was just screaming, like, absolutely celebrating. I can't even, like, paint the picture for you, Chris, how it's gonna be like, this will go down in my mind forever, of just like downpouring rain. Everyone is like soaking wet and just screaming, like all huddled around this computer. But it was like great that we could all at least be together here if we couldn't be there. So this is definitely memorable, very memorable.
Definitely. All right, Izzy, we'll let you get going and get back to the celebration. And congrats to the Seidel family on a bronze medal at the Olympics.
I know. Wild.
Well, we'll have to get a celebration going in New York, too.
Oh, yes, for sure. 100%. So.
All right, we are back. And as Kyle noted right before we cut to that interview, today we had the women's 1500 meter final.
Oh, such a great event.
Yeah. And in particular, I think this was the crowning moment for Faith Kipyegon as one of the best female milers of all time. Middle distance runner out of Kenya who in 2016 won gold here, took a break in 2018 to give birth to her first daughter, and then after that storms back in 2019 to win silver in the 1500, and all of a sudden runs 3:51 for this event back last month at the Monaco Diamond League, and you're starting to scratch your head as like,
Beat Stefan Hassan,
who beat her for the gold in 2019. And so we knew this was going to be the duel that was going to happen. And this was, as we called it, kind of the Preakness Stakes of the Olympics, where Stefan Hassan was making stop number two on her way to her triple. And Stefan Hassan pulled the brakes.
We need to talk about Stefan Hassan's introduction before we get to the race. So we are leading into, you know, good introductions. Stefan, she's had a prelim, a semifinal, now this final. In between, had a prelim of the 5K, a final of the 5K. So coming out looking, you know, like everyone else is just on fire, happy to be there, all that. Stefan is in the total zone, gives a little hand wave, and you're like, oh my God, I'm actually so scared of her right now because I don't know what she's going to do, because bottling that up. And when she gets to the line, the camera pans across her and nope, nothing.
She's sick of the camera. She's seen it.
She's sick of it. She doesn't want to do interviews after. She's done. All she wants to do is race. And she immediately, when the race starts, her, Laura Muir, and Faith Kipyegon go to the back. So it's a very classic move. And we've seen Laura Muir and Stefan do this in most kind of level races.
Can I just say I disagree with this as a move? Like, there's no need to go into last at the very beginning. Like, you can get off the line a little bit faster because I watched the race 200 meters in, you guys are taking over, so why get off the line so slowly?
So normally what they do is they're trying to just the jostling in the front, they don't want to go down, they don't want to fall. So I understand where you're disagreeing, but I think that because there have been so many falls and these races are getting really physical, like these women can close faster than anyone. As long as they're there, they're going to be fine.
But when Stefan takes out on 62 and you're going to go to the lead and push the pace, it's not really an issue.
Well, they did it for like 3 seconds during this race, which was bizarre.
Yeah, so I don't know. I get it maybe during like a 5K when it's prelims and you really just want to hang out in the beginning and make sure you make it to like the final K smoothly. In a 1500 in which you're inevitably going to take the pace, just take the pace. Why run around everyone in lane 3?
Yeah, so basically the three big gals go to the front. Gabby DeBus-Stafford is there as well. Lyndon Hall, Frenay from Ethiopia, and Japan's Nozomi Tanaka, which I really want to highlight her. She set a national record and a PR in the semifinal, has been absolutely fire. Such a pleasure to watch. Breaks 4 minutes today. She was amazing to me. The Americans had a kind of a rough day. Oof. You know, I think it's like Kyle was saying yesterday, we're obviously have these high expectations because that's what we're expected to see. The women's 1500, I think we're missing, you know, we're expected to see Shelby Houlihan in that front spot. And we've seen her the past world championships, and definitely, you know, time moves fast and no one's forgotten about that, but it's kind of like you're Ellie Purrier was stepping into those shoes. She was absolutely on fire at the trials, destroyed the field. She hasn't raced a ton internationally, and Shelby has more of that experience. So I think we were all kind of expecting for Ellie to do something similar.
Sources are saying that in between the trials and the actual Olympics, that Ellie had a little bit of a foot thing and had to take a little bit of downtime.
Mm-hmm.
I'll come out and say it. I don't know if anyone else wanted to be able to admit it.
Sources.
But sources are saying that she was a little banged up after the trials, and that happens to a lot of people, and we don't know what happened. She hadn't raced between. And
Corey's, you know, been good.
The fact that she still came out and ran like 401 twice, who knows what she was dealing with between those two meets? Like, we don't know. And the thing that's crazy is that 401 is still such a good time. And it just so happened to be in one of the fastest. No, it was the fastest Olympic 1500 of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think something that we forget too is that, like, the weight of the world was on Ellie here as, like, oh, she's our medal hope and all of that. But, like, this is a first-time Olympian, mm-hmm. you know? And I think that what we're going to see, especially with Ellie, who we know can run a 1500, but also super good at the 5K, I think in 3 years' time, we're seeing something, like, unbelievable from her next level. This is, as we were saying with a lot of the young members of the Team USA, this is about experience for her, and I think there's big, big future ahead. So looking towards the next few years.
It is good, I think, that we did bring up Shelby Houlihan's name, because I think it was not too long after this race wrapped up, Kyle, that I turned to you, and I see the time, and I'm like, 354, 355 is what it took to medal, and it's like Shelby is right in that ballpark and was very much in a Laura Muir position over the last couple years of just chipping away and getting into that conversation for the medals. And Laura Muir had it today, running 354.5 for the British national record. Sifan Hassan ends up third, 355.86. Afterwards just said, like, that she's tired and she needs to get it together because she's got the 10K tomorrow. Literally, I think, expending just every bit of energy that she has left. It's like you want to focus on what happened at hand, but the little itty-bitty part of curiosity that's in your brain does sneak in and be like, how would have Shelby have fared in this race? And I tend to think pretty good.
Gabby Stafford's definitely a good barometer, too, for her. Gabby Stafford ran 358.93. And honestly, I think that would be disappointing for Gabby Stafford because it was a really similar result for her as in Doha, and she's just itching to get on that podium. But I think today was the way the cards fell for Laura Muir. Complete celebration, was utterly ecstatic to be there. I'm so happy to see Laura Muir finally getting a medal, a well-deserved medal. She, I think, is very unassuming in a way where, you know, she always runs well. She races incredibly well. She's been training with Jim Mariki, who was just off the medal stand in the women's 800. So great to see Laura Muir come into her own today.
I think Gabby is maybe looking to Laura as a little bit of inspiration in mm-hmm. the sense, just being on just the outside for a little bit. And in a couple of years, I think that likely seeing her on a medal stand.
Yeah. And I think the other thing about Laura Muir that I found really interesting today is afterwards, the comments is that she had about Faith Kipyegon. The utmost respect. I think she said that she's, you know, the best at it, one of the best to ever do it. Really respectful of the fact that Faith was today's champ. And I think You know, David Melly, who gets a shout out on the show every single day because he's very active in a group chat that we have, is like the biggest Faith Kipyegon stan. I think today really cemented it for a lot of people that she is the best in the world at this event. And you know, it's always fun to, you know, she's a great, another great follow on Instagram.
I was just about to say that everyone needs to follow Faith Kipyegon because she puts up like drills to really good music, like the Kenyan style rhythmic drills that they do to great music, a little inside scoop. So fun. She's only 27. So yeah. I don't think Faith Kipyegon's going away anytime soon. And you know, she's my mom's favorite athlete.
I don't necessarily think she has the same coach as Eliud Kipchoge, Patrick Tsang, but she's in that camp pretty often because Kipchoge makes a lot of cameos in her videos, and he shares her on Instagram constantly. So if she's a friend of Kipchoge's, she's a friend of mine.
Can I just say that Laura Muir just bawling, crying afterwards, just like her face and her hands, was the best thing I've ever seen, because that's just, I think, how I would react. I would just want to like crawl in a little ball and just like be like, I can't believe how hard I worked and that I got this done. And she's someone who's so well respected, obviously within GB, but the whole world, mm-hmm. for the way that she runs. And so I think there's just a lot of excitement to really see her pull this off, get the national record, and have that hardware that kind of proves something that we've all known for a really long time, that she is, you know, well deserving of being recognized as an all-timer.
In a way, if we wanted to split the Guts and Magic, you know, awards that we hand out on the show, then I would give the Magic to Laura Muir for finally pulling this off, and then Molly would end up getting the Guts.
You get really, a Magic, and you get a Magic, and you get a Magic.
For pulling it off today, finally, at last.
Well, a woman who does not need to prove herself at all, but, you know, just did it for the fans, did it for her family. Miss Allyson Felix. Wow. This is the women's 400 meter final, and it did not disappoint. Allyson Felix snags the bronze medal. Shawnee Miller-Revo gets the gold. And Paulino. Marlene Paulino from the Dominican gets second. And this was a great race. So fast. Paulino actually gets a national record. This huge season best for Allyson Felix.
Yeah, so the times were 48:36 for Shawnee Miller-Webo, 49:20 for Marlady Paulino, and Allyson Felix, 49:46. That is the second fastest time of her career, and much faster than she ran at the 2016 Olympics in Rio, where Miller-Webo dove at the finish line, and Allyson ended up second for silver, and that was like hugely controversial for some reason, even though people dive at finish lines constantly. But yeah, this was the total resurgence. The cards lined up perfectly for Allyson Felix, that this thing was just constantly building. She was getting faster as the rounds went along, and you're kind of a little bit surprised. It's like, she's gonna do this thing. And so gets her 10th Olympic medal, breaks the tie with Marlene Audie from Jamaica that she had coming into the games, where for the most decorated female track and field athlete of all time, and now moves into a tie with Carl Lewis for the most decorated USA track and field athlete of all time, but has a chance to break that with the 4x4 if she's on that team, which I haven't seen the complete listing. All I know is that Sydney McLaughlin is part of that team because she shared that on Instagram. So the chances for gold in that event are pretty good, and then that would make her the second most decorated athlete of all time.
Where do Shawnee Miller-Webo, just like 2016 defending champ, coming out, she's so good at the 400, and I think something...
Bahamian sweep, her and Stephen Gardner.
2019, she finished in the silver position behind Aid Nasser of Bahrain,
who ended up getting...
Suspended for a few years for whereabouts failure, yet she is holding on to that gold medal, I believe. I mean, I was so confident that Miller-Webo would win this race beforehand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to be that good that, like, it's just like, all right, like, she's going to take first. Let's see who gets second and third. Like, this should be fun. It just...
Yeah, when they did the replay, they did a slow motion. They have this really great cam when they use it. And they did a replay where it took a while for someone else to come in the picture. That's how much Shawnee Miller-Webo won by. My favorite moment of the women's 400, obviously seeing Allyson Felix celebrate was Shawna Miller-Weibo with her husband, Marcel Weibo, who is a decathlete. They got to celebrate and be there together. So one of the few people in Tokyo who actually gets to be with a family member. So they were both in front of that fun fan cam.
Allyson Felix, 10 medals, 8 from the Olympics, 18 from the World Championships. I just like, I have none.
Me neither. And it's just you combine everyone in this room, none.
Yeah, all of us combined, none.
Shoot.
It's funny because we just saw a video not too long ago, a couple days ago, on Instagram stories where Mo Farah's kid is like walking around the house and like he's got all the medals out and like he's just looking at all of them, like which one looks cool, what year was which one, and the kid is trying to find which one's the oldest one, and he pulls one out that says like, oh, 2001 cross country, like this is your oldest one, and Mo Farah goes like, nah, I've got older ones than that. And so you have to wonder what that is going to be like at the Felix household, where baby Cameron is just going to be playing with all of these medals, whether it's World Championships or Olympics. Plenty of toys for baby Cameron.
It's a weird toy.
All right, on to our next event, which is, you know, we got some options here, guys. We can either talk about the relays or the 5K.
Let's go relays, and we'll close it out with the 5K.
All right, well, let's talk about relays. Let's start with the women's 4x100-meter relay, which was won by Jamaica, which we kind of all figured would happen, but in a national record.
It took a little bit of time to figure out that they definitely
Because
won.
That first handoff for Jamaica was, like, pretty close, in that everyone was kind of talking afterwards, like, are they going to get DQ'd for that? And even the celebration was a little bit tapered, that Team USA was going nuts, because worst case scenario in a situation like that is you end up with silver and you're very clearly celebrating. But for Jamaica, they were even kind of just
was
like,
let's do the 1-2-3 first. So it's Jamaica who got first, USA in second, and GB in third, but it was Sharika Jackson who, the three other athletes have the flags. They're celebrating. And she had these looks that were priceless. She's like, I don't want to become a meme. That's what the look I saw. She was looking around like, is someone going to take this away from me? I'm not ready. And finally, she ended up celebrating. But I don't think she was convinced.
Yeah, you only know it's a bad sign if all of a sudden then they just pull you over to an interview with Lewis Johnson and he'll show you, yeah, like, explain to me what happened in this handoff.
One where she had the flag in her hands and she gave a look and I just erupted in laughter because I was like, someone please tell them if it's not a thing. But I think it just ended up being
the way it held up.
Yeah, it really did hold up.
So a bad opinion I have that I don't want to stand too strongly on this. I don't want to die on this hill. Enough with the exchange zones and like, especially, make them bigger. I mean,
okay, wait, you're saying I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm over exchange zones.
So you're saying that like some people can run more than 100 in the 4x100?
Yeah, whatever. If you have someone, it's a disadvantage to run too long. You should have to break it up as long as you, as best fit as you decide. Just get it around and make sure four people hold it at some point. Don't want to die on this hill. We're just brainstorming here. And
can someone make us like one of those graphics where you see the dots? New York Times, can you build this for us? How it would possibly function? Who would be the fastest at certain times?
Right. Well, I mean, then you end up in a scenario where it's like, we happen to have someone who runs really fast for 200. Let's just give him the leg for 200, then 50, and then.
But the thing is, if you consider like the top speed of 200, like breaking it up to hundreds is probably legitimately the best way to do it. So no one's going to be like, all right, you run 300 meters and then like pass it off. It'll end up being roughly the same, but it's like, as long as you get around. Also, I'm willing to settle for at least color the exchange zones differently than the rest of the track, because it seems like no one knows where the exchange zones are with these small little yellow lines.
At least get us some NFL style graphics out here. My goodness. How am I supposed to determine which line it is out there?
Imagine doing it at top speed.
I need to see the triangles for sure. And you know, they normally have a verbal cue where you're like, stick. All that, I think they should mic up all the athletes during it, and I want the people on the backstretch mic'd up, because you get to watch the race a little bit. I want to hear what they're saying. It might just be awkward heavy breathing.
I don't know if miking up anyone will work, because obviously it'll be a little bit heavy, but the way that they do it on Survivor is like all the cameras are super hidden, and like there's microphones set everywhere, so it picks up everything. So whoever the production crew is on Survivor for CBS needs to migrate over to NBC and then do the broadcast for that. But
are we completely out on my idea to get rid of exchange zones?
I don't know if I'm willing to, like, if you're
make them bigger.
You get two lanes. How about that? Everyone gets two lanes.
You run in any lane you want. No.
No lanes.
No more lanes.
I think that
enough
gets
enough with the lanes.
That gets us to the 4x400, but we still have more 4x100, including the Italian team.
What the heck's up with Italy?
We're moving to the men's side. I think the craziest thing about this Italian team, we saw
how fast they
gold medal in. I can't remember his name. Marcel Jacobs. Yeah. I keep
Lamont
saying
his, Marcel Jacobs.
Yeah. I keep using one of his middle names as his last name. Mabi. But he wasn't the anchor, which goes to show, I think they actually practiced relays knowing that he wasn't the best on anchor. And we got brought home by Filippo Tortu, who I think has suffered a lot of injury issues over the years. Kind of an underrated athlete. There was no one stopping him and his emotion.
I think he had the national record for a little bit before Lamont Marcel Jacobs like overtook it and set like a European record with his win in the 100. But that man was the most emotional person I've seen at the game so far.
Just straight up bawling.
They couldn't lift him off the ground. His teammates, he just was completely in shock and awe. And I think the Italian celebrations have been one of my Olympic highlights, which, you know, we'll recap tomorrow some of our Olympic highlights, as unfortunately it's the last day is upon us. So
Italian men and U.S. men, I think, have the same number of gold medals now.
In what? In the
four overall.
In general.
Yeah, I think they're both at 5.
Wow.
Wow.
I no one would have predicted
that. Yeah. Or did I just make that up? But I think that's actually true.
No one would have predicted that.
Well, GB, Great Britain, got second in the 4x100 relay, men's relay. And then Canada comes up for third. Andre DeGrasse gets a bronze medal as well to add to his gold.
So something I'll put on the radar out there that we haven't fully looked into yet, but I just saw a headline that was floating around, and this is obviously sometimes people pulling the guilty by association card, but I don't know, Kyle, did you see this, that there's a police probe regarding a bodybuilder who claimed credit for Lamont Marcel Jacobs' Olympic gold medal, and they did some investigation into that guy called Operation Muscle Bound.
That's a sick operation
name. That is a sick operation name, but no one wants any sort of tie to anything that's illegal. And so maybe this is just very early on, people plucking at some unsubstantiated rumors, but there's apparently a former sports nutritionist who's under investigation. And so kind of like, not that it, once again, I guess, like, this is the sport of track and field and we shouldn't be shocked by anything, but just the cloud that always constantly hangs over this sport, especially when there's anything that's truly, truly surprising to us. So that's just something that we haven't had a chance to fully dive into and read every single story, but the headlines are out there for people to make their own sort of judgment, and we'll leave it at that for now.
Before we move on, can you just fact check me on that Italy 5 gold medal stat?
Yeah, so Italy does have 5 gold medals right now, 4 of them by men. Lamont Marcel Jacobs in the 100, Gianmarco Tamberi in the high jump, Italy in the 4x1, and Massimo Stanno in the 20K race walk. And the other 5th gold medal is Antonella Palmisano from the 20K race walk as well. So for the people who said we didn't talk enough about the race walk yesterday, apologies, there's your race walk mention.
We gotta get those U.S. gold medals in the race walk up.
If it went, the moment that's someone the wins a medal in the U.S.
or
in the race walk, we're gonna be race walk guys.
Maybe some gender equality.
Yeah.
Why? What do you mean?
There's no 50K women's
50K for the women.
Why is that?
Well, it's gonna be gone in the next Olympics anyway.
Oh, jeez.
We talked a lot about Molly in this episode, but I may have my new favorite athlete. And it's in the men's 5K. Joshua Cheptegei. I know he's not new in the circuit at all, but it's really just his introduction. This is just a me thing, maybe. No one else gets
No, we love it too.
He did a little chest bang.
Visit Uganda.
Come out. Silverback Gorillas. Shout out. And then on the podium, when he won his gold medal in 1258, he did it again. And I just completely lost it. So Joshua Cheptegei gets first. Second is Mohamed of Canada. And third is USA's Paul Chelimo. Brought it out at the very end. He kind of dove at the end, but it was more of like a parallel 90-degree angle.
The Naruto run
across. And that was... It was an exciting, exciting race, but Joshua Cheptegei, you have my heart.
Yeah, so the times for that were Cheptegei, 12:58, Muhammad Ahmed, 12:58 as well, Paul Chelimo, 12:59. It was a fast one. I think for the first 3K of the race, every single split was either tied or faster than the Olympic record, which was Kenenisa Bekele's, which they just missed barely. And so Cheptegei, this is a world record holder last year, broke it at the Monaco Diamond League, broke Bekele's record there. He feels like I saw his post-race comments afterwards, and he said he feels more like a 10K guy, that this was redemption for him taking silver in that race a couple days ago to Salomon Berega. He's a pure 5K guy as well. This was a masterclass by him.
I'm actually surprised that he would have won the 5K, not the 10K. I don't think of him as a big kicker, and that's, I think, part of the reason why Uganda was pushing the pace early. They wanted a faster race. And yeah, I think he's someone who's going to have a really bright future on the roads eventually. Like, he's a rhythm guy, gets into it, never has, like, you know, I don't see him closing in 51, 52 in any 400 or at the back end of any 5Ks for 400. And so, you know, I guess that's the benefit of being a sub 13 race.
Mohamed finishing silver is not as surprising after the performance that he had at the Florence Diamond League, that another crazy fast race where actually he beat Cheptegei there. So for Mo, have you raced against Mo very much?
I think a couple times.
He strikes me as like a competitor that just absolutely hates losing. And we got a little bit taste of it, of just how intense of a competitor he is a couple months back when there was that race where Eric Avila hit the ground and he was still a little bit feisty, I would say. And so something strikes me that Mohamed was super disappointed with how the 10K played out, that this was a revenge race 100% for him.
One name that kind of was coming up a fair amount on the broadcast, and I think that we all would be play more a factor, was Mohamed Khatir of Spain. And he had one of the fastest times in the season leading in. We talked about in a previous episode where it really had just had so much progression in his times, was really a non-factor in this race at all. Was kind of set himself in the middle, but once the pace started being pushed, nothing really happened. So that was kind of a surprise for me.
He got dropped with like 800 to go or something like that.
He ran super well multiple points throughout the season. And then I just watched him run the first 3+K of the race
in
entirely
two.
On like the outside of lane 1-2, like never settled on the rail at all, and that just adds up.
Yeah, definitely not his day. But someone who did have a great day, who far out of the medals, but in 12th was Luis Grijalva, running 13:10, a national record. So I honestly think that's an amazing performance for Luis. I want to give him a shout out. Not for being here, because he really did perform very, very well. He's so young, gonna be back, and you know, representing his country. I want to get, yeah, go Luis.
Yeah, awesome race for him.
I would say, you know how we had that conversation back at the trials where we graded the 10K squad, and you know, we gave them the B, and after the 10K we said Grant, you know, outperformed the grade that we gave him. It was like a B+ or whatever it was. And this one, I think this is where you more saw of like that B grade, where Grant Fisher ends up being ninth, Woody Kincaid back in 14th. Grant ran 3:08, really strong race. But again, this is the Olympics, and it's a global scale race where, you know, we have four guys who break 13, and this is after already a previously, you know, one round that was also super fast. And so again, this is one of these races where someone like Grant Fisher and Woody are going to take a lot of lessons from for the next big opportunity that they get.
I think that's a good point, but I also do want to just point out that Grant Fisher, according to his own Instagram post, did not run between the prelims and the finals.
What did he do?
I think he strained a calf or something. In his Instagram post, he gave basically a shout out to their team's trainer for helping him get on that line. And
1308 so, on a strained calf. You go.
Pretty solid, I would say, if you can't run for a few days leading into a 5K final. Something that I do want to touch on is Paul Chelimo a little more. We need to talk about
it. Yeah.
First off, Paul has not had the best year. And I think it speaks to him as a competitor and just historically what we've seen that he's capable of, that I came into this race fully confident in his ability to run really fast. And still, I mean, of course he won the trials, you know, on the US stage, but his international races previously were, you know, they were fine. They weren't everything that he probably would have hoped that they would be. And we hadn't seen any blazing fast times, but he showed up at the right time and came to play at the Olympics. But man, oh man, was that last like lap or two a roller coaster of emotion as a Paul Chelimo diehard.
We were sitting here being like, he was on the infield at one point. He was throwing some bows. He was not making it easy, and he does have quite the like the long loping stride, which I think can get you into a fair amount of trouble. And it's when you think that athletes are running slow and they're not, because they're so bunched up, because everyone is at the same or very similar caliber, that it does get choppy. But Paul Chelimo, in a way, he did not look comfortable.
I mean, he's still touching his nose with 150 meters to go, and like
he's looking around.
We gotta talk to him.
And, like, I counted three head look backs in the last 100, and these kind of tired ticks that he has. You know, he pulled it out at the end with his, you know,
he wanted fold. That look, it's like go I hard. Always say go hard or suffer for the rest of your
the
life.
Rest of your life,
that's what I always say.
It's a Kyle quote. Put it on a shirt.
Yeah, with Paul, that last final 50, you were just kind of like, well, what last 150? He's like looking around. Would you say you caught him at one point? He touched his nose, sweated brow, wiped the sweat off his face. It was just, I have a quote that I'm trying to pull up from him after the race where he was talking about it. He's just, well, first off,
I know the quote that you want to talk about.
On a serious note, his brother died back in March.
Yeah,
and he went to Kenya to bury his brother and spent some time there with family, but also training. And so it wasn't an ideal buildup to the Olympic trials, because that was definitely unplanned. And so after the race, he said, "This is for my brother. It's been tough. I didn't expect to lose my brother this year, but things happen. Coming and getting a medal and being a double Olympic medalist, you don't get anything better than that." And then after that, he just was asked, and this is Paul being Paul, later on they asked him about his future plans after this, and he says, "I'm coming back Paris 2024, 2028 LA. I'm not done yet. 2032, I'm going to be racing with my daughter, and she's going to be running the 800 with a thing mo."
Wow. Yeah, sure.
By the way, his daughter is like 2 years old, I think, is what you kind of like did the math in your head.
Yeah, like she's namely, she'll be 13 years old or something.
So
Paul, I think you better have a long career.
And Paul is calling his shot in terms of like a little bit of pressure for a 13-year-old to make the Olympic team.
Well, Paul's no stranger to antics, no stranger to big statements. And, you know, we got a little taste of that at the trials. And, you know, I think he kind of seems uncomfortable when he's not in control in a way. And, you know, good job, Paul. Bronze medal.
You can say whatever you want about Paul and his final 400, but never say he's not the most entertaining person to watch.
He is the most entertaining person in U.S. track and field. Fact.
There we go. Wow.
And I love track and field.
You love track and field, and you're going to say that.
Yeah.
I love it so much.